along to the RTE Rugby Podcast, and it is a big week on the pod because we have the United Rugby Championship kicking off this weekend, all four provinces in action, and a big URC season preview ahead this afternoon. We'll also touch on the Women's Rugby World Cup final, England taking on Canada at Allianz Stadium in Twickenham on Saturday afternoon. Bernard Jackman is in studio with me this week. And also joining us on the line, first time in a while we've had him on the podcast, Johnny Murphy.
What do you think of the new studio?
I like it. Looking forward to getting up and seeing it. Yeah, I'm not sure there'll be enough room beside Bert on the couch.
We'll get it. Pull in a chair, Johnny.
We'll get him a day off.
Wait, we'll get him a day off at some point. You won't know me in a few weeks.
We'll get you to bring up some gear as well to show off around the studio. So the United Rugby Championship kicks off this weekend. All four provinces are in action. Stormers host Leinster in the first of those games Friday evening, 6 p.m. Then Ulster are at home to the Dragons. That's later on Friday night. Scarlets and Munster in Clonethly is a 5:30 p.m. kickoff on Saturday evening, followed then by Connacht against Benetton Saturday, 7:45. Fellas, I think it might be best to kick things off. We might go back to front in terms of the provinces of where they finished last season, because Ulster and Connacht are the two sides that probably have the most to gain this season and finished so low down the table last season. So I think that's probably the best jumping off point, because we haven't got to see them since the end of the regular season, and we got to see Leinster and Munster in playoffs. But Ulster, last season, 14th place. They were pretty much in the playoff mix for the heading down the final games of the season, but ultimately fell apart. They start with fixtures at home to Dragons, away to Edinburgh, at home to Bulls, and then they're on their South African tour against the Sharks and Lions. To start with on Ulster, it's been a really interesting off-season. There have been a lot of experienced players let go, but Richie Murphy, this is his second full season in charge. He has his coaching team together. He got the coaches he wants. The band is back together from that brilliant Ireland under-20 side. It does sort of feel like this is the season that the chips are in at Ulster, and this is the season where we can really judge Richie Murphy and his Ulster project.
Recruited well in terms of their foreign players as well. Obviously, Augustus is a rock star back row. Leinster fans saw him up close at the Gallagher Premiership, know all about him. For the last four or five seasons, he's been one of the most dynamic ball carriers in England. Obviously, Angus Bell comes a little bit later in the season, and he's a big ball carrier. And they'll be hoping his injury profile improves. He's been out a lot, so it's a bit of a gamble. But if he's fit, he will give them go forward, which I think they really lacked last year. And I think the benefit of what both for Connacht and Ulster of not qualifying meant that they broke up a little bit earlier. Neither of them had a huge amount of British and Irish Lions. Obviously, Ulster had none. Ulster's draw is very favourable. I mean, you know, they could get a really fast start and build that confidence. But the pressure would be on to get that fast start. I know I spoke to Mark Sexton a couple of weeks ago, and he was really impressed with the quality in terms of athletes and skill set that he has to work with, and believes that there's the nucleus there of a really good team. And for Richie, to be fair, like, he went in at the end of the previous season and stopped the rot. Mm-hmm. And then obviously last year, he'd be very disappointed with the results, but he was trying a lot of players. He was finding out about his staff, and now, as you said, he has the staff that he knows. You want to get the payback for that. So I'm really excited to see how they play. The style of rugby that Richie played with the under-20s was very attractive on the eye, but it was also winning rugby. Ravenhill can be a fortress, but, you know, getting those wins early, getting that confidence and building on it then, not having a distraction of the Champions Cup. I mean, you remember last year, some of the tough, they went away to Bordeaux, et cetera, and got a hiding. And even though they managed to recover quite quickly then, definitely at the end of the season, they were running on fumes. So being the Challenge Cup also, I think, will help them in the URC. So hopefully this is the season where Ulster start to really show progress, and Richie and his coaching staff can then have another good recruitment campaign and look to be back up there in the playoffs of the URC.
Johnny, it feels like for Ulster this season, when you look at the players who've left, Alan O'Connor, Andy Warwick, Matty Ray, John Cooney, Kieran Treadwell, these are guys with multiples of hundreds of appearances for Ulster. Obviously, the signings coming in, Juarno Augustus, top quality player, Angus Bell later on in the season when he comes in, top quality player. But you'd Johnny, you think about the amount of younger players who are going to have to step up and take on leadership roles this season. It does feel like this is a season of revolution rather than evolution for Ulster.
Yeah, maybe. But I think Richie knows those guys because he's coached so many of them throughout the year. And I think every one of the coaching staff know them too, given that they've coached the Irish 20 for so long. So he knows what qualities they have from a leadership perspective and how they can stand up. I think, you know, it's really important that the likes of Jacob Stockdale and his age profile of players, step up. You know, they're 20, those 27 to 30-year-olds, they have to have an opportunity where they stamp their own personality on their teams and their own leadership style in the team. But I think for Richie, it's a big coup and a big trust to get that coaching ticket back together. Young, dynamic coaching group that really want to play. And I think he's going to trust in you know, Richie has been in that younger development space for a long time pre-taking this. So he trusts and knows those guys' qualities that he has. And I think that's going to be actually, even though people say, I think it's going to be one of their biggest strengths throughout the year, that they he has that trust in those younger players and that younger generation of player.
And like when you look back at their season last year, you see 14 straight off the bat and you're like, that's a horrendous season. Mm. It's absolutely brutal. But when you actually break down and go through it game by game, like I did it there a few days ago, there's an incredibly easy case to make. Like you just turn around a couple of simple results here and there and they're so much further up the table. They were 19-0 ahead at one stage at halftime away to Cardiff in October, November. They lose that game. They gave Leinster a good crack in November, went on to lose that game. Then in January, back-to-back defeats to Zebra and Benetton. The Zebra won at home. Mm. You turn three of those five or six results into wins and they're knocking on the playoff door. Like there wasn't a, I know it fell apart disastrously at the end, but there wasn't a huge amount of difference between themselves and those teams around seventh or eighth in the table.
Yeah, they just showed a lack of composure at times. Even that end game against Munster, they gave Munster three ins in the last 10 minutes to eventually lead up to Tom Daly's score. And it wasn't experienced, actually, and you mentioned some of the players there leaving, and they were vastly experienced. So it was something else that Richie would have identified in terms of the ability to stay in system, ability to stay composed. It just wasn't there. The only really bad performance, or the worst performance, was the Zebra game, and that was horrific. And I think they never really recovered from that. That was just a shock result, really bad performance. But yeah, and I remember, you know, last 16, was it in Europe, going toe to toe with Bordeaux.
They gave him a crack, and
showed a huge amount of fight and character. So I think it's in them. It's in them. It's just to nail those and defensively, you know, Jonathan Bell has left. But this isn't a Jonathan Bell issue, a Willie Falloon issue. But for whatever reason, this Ulster team over the last 4 or 5 years have not shown a desire to defend as much as they have to attack. Mm-hmm. And I think until they fix that, they will always struggle to be consistent, I think. But again, you know, young players who know these coaches, a good pre-season in place, clarity amongst the coaching staff, can they have enough understanding and an ability to implement those systems for longer periods in games? If they do, they'll certainly get more results. But yeah, you're right. But within that, I agree with you, there was close games they lost. But at the end of the season, like points against, there were some horrific stats within it too. So he certainly, Richie is a realist. He won't have papered over any of those either. They will know where they have to fit, what they have to fix, and will have worked hard to make sure that they're much, much better this year.
I think first up, you're going to have to concentrate on, obviously, first one first, Dragons. You know, it's really important you get 5 points in that, start off, get a bit of confidence, then going into Edinburgh, which can be, which is a tricky enough place to go, depending on kind of who's available and what's there from a Scotland perspective. You know, if they can get, I think if a good return is getting 10 points out of those two games, get a bit of confidence within the squad, and then use South Africa as a 2 week trip where there's going to be, you know, it's not just an opportunity on the pitch, but it's also opportunity off the pitch to have a kind of an old school tour, get a really good, and the best thing, like they can target that trip knowing that Europe is going to be different ahead of the, you know, autumn series where there's. So I think that's a really, really good thing that they can have a real stage, a process, first three, 10 points, get to South Africa, old school tour, and then see where they are after those five. But for me, I think it's really important that they get Ravenhill kind of rocking on Friday, you know, on Friday night, I think it is, and then, you know, get something everyone to cheer about with a bit of confidence heading over to Edinburgh, where, as you say, they have to kind of get over a few demons from last year.
Do you expect them to get top eight, Bernard?
Yeah, I do. I think the Welsh teams are going to have a difficult year, yeah, just with everything that's happening in the background. The Dragons actually, ironically, have recruited the best of all the Welsh regions. When you look at their squad, you would say that they have the most margin for improvement, but obviously historically...
We kind of say that every year.
I know. Yeah, I know. Absolutely. But... it must be an absolute nightmare to be a professional player in Wales at the moment with the uncertainty. So it's hard to see them. Like even Cardiff lost this week. You know what I mean? It's bananas. But and they're owned by the WRU, and it's just been left so late. But that's Welsh rugby at the moment. So I don't see. I think there's easier points on offer there. Top eight. It really depends on the start. They've got to make hay now, and I think that realistically they'd be looking for three wins before they go to South Africa. Mm-hmm. I think it's a big advantage for any of the Irish teams to go to South Africa early, pre-November. Obviously, Leinster historically have had it at the end of season, and they've pushed hard to get that rectified. And now it's ideal where it's happening for them because it's effectively a pre-season tour, that actually has some competitive games, but it gives you a real chance to tail your pre-season, which obviously is minus a lot of international players. But for Ulster as well, I think they'll benefit hugely from that. And I think they'll be there or thereabouts top eight, but I'm not sure. I would have to see them play a few games, and it's to me the big worry. I think with Mark Sexton going in there, with the skill set they have, the speed they have, their tackle will be good. It's can they show a little bit more resilience to defence is going to be the big challenge for Willie Falloon. Like I would say, of all the defence jobs in Irish rugby, that's the hardest one going into off the bat, just because of what I've seen from them over the last 4 or 5 years.
Experience of coaching against Willie and knowing Willie through kind of playing with him R&A, that kind of stuff. I think mentally he'll be able to instill a bit of kind of mental fortitude in them. He's an Armagh man. You've seen what he did with Armagh in the club game. I know it's completely different, but I do think having that kind of Ulster edge to their defence coming from a homegrown young Ulster man that has been and done it at Irish 20s level, which a lot of them will trust.
Let's move it on to Connacht, because they're probably the other side, along with Ulster, who have so much more ground to gain this season. Last season, finished 13th, had a good start to the campaign, but ultimately it all just faded away. 6 losses in 7 games around the turn of the year. They start at home to Benetton, home against Scarlets, and then away to Cardiff, home Bulls, away to Munster. The big change, obviously, in the off-season, Stuart Lancaster coming in place of Pete Wilkins. They also have a bit of a feel-good factor at the moment with the new North Stand being redeveloped. That'll be open in January. We were up there on Monday afternoon and we got to have a great look around the place. It's going to be a fantastic setup when it is all up and running. But I suppose just around the general sense of optimism around the province, Bernard, I was at a wedding on Saturday, a friend of mine, and I was chatting to another friend there, Connor, who's a big Connacht fan, has been all his life. He's from Ballina and Mayo. And he said to me, I was a little bit surprised to hear it. He said, this is the most excited he's been as a Connacht supporter going into a season. Does he have a right to be that excited?
Oh, it was a massive coup when it was announced that Stuart Lancaster was coming. obviously, I played in Connacht and I've been back in the sports ground pretty much every year since I retired, and I'd never seen the mood as low as it was at the tail end of that season. But in the dressing room,
Even the Kieran Kane season.
That was bad, but I think that was the recency of the Pat Lam success. You know, it was still there.
A little bit there.
It's still there.
The optimism was still there.
I think they felt there was a lack of direction, and this is crazy because, you know, I was talking to some supporters in the over the Greyhound Stadium and the stand side of it, and we were looking across at a Dexcom stand being built, and we knew that, you know, there was so much clarity in terms of where they were going in terms of physical structure and investment, but yet on the field it was just it was a little bit listless, and I think, you know, the Stewart thing was a big coup. It was fair play to everybody involved in getting it happen, because you're getting a coach who understands the URC, you're getting a coach who understands the Irish mentality, you're getting a coach who has a proven track record in player and coach development, you're getting a coach who's being international level, he's obviously gone away to France, he's come back, and he is an unbelievable get for Connacht. And what we've seen since is fans buying in across the board. I think season ticket sales went up straight away when he was announced. And the playing squad now believe that they have someone at the top who can actually make them better as rugby players and make them better as a team. So by all accounts, the preseason has gone incredibly well. They've obviously looked really good. I saw some of the footage of their game against Sale Sharks, and you have to be careful not to read too much into that. But what Connacht were doing was on a level way above what they were doing last season, which was a pretty poor season. And that feel-good factor, that confidence, and also just Billy Millard coming in as general manager. Like, I don't know how much fans know about this, but there's been a lot of discontent with playing staff and some coaching staff over the last 5 or 6 years around Connacht's recruitment retention processes. And there has been a lot of conflict, and there's been a lot of unrest around that. So someone like Billy Millard has obviously done the job in Cardiff, has had high-powered roles in Harlequins, mm-hmm. has been in Connacht before, can build that relationship with the IRFU, build that trust, build that relationship with agents, players, etc., and let Stewart do what he does, which is create the culture and create the coaching environment to make them better. So I think in tandem, it's been a really positive off-season for Connacht. The challenge is effectively, it's pretty much the same squad, okay? Yeah.
You still have Gilbert coming in, but not for another little while after the NPC.
And they've lost some big names again. And they've lost some really tried and trusted squad players again on the back of the season before, where they lost a lot of the more established players, if you remember. And some of it's down to budgets and things like that. But Bundy and Mack obviously were away with the British and Irish Lions. Their game time's gonna have to be managed. So they need a better coaching environment. But I do think that this move, in terms of Stewart going in there, and Richie being in Ulster, provided that goes well, that will have a bigger influence on movement of players in Ireland than anything David Nusafora or Joe Schmidt tried to do in terms of moving players. Mm-hmm. I just think the players will migrate towards Stewart. If Richie can turn Ulster around, his understanding and his relationship with players from the under-20s over the last, in his time there, will help Ulster recruit internally in terms of Irish. But I still do think, you know, both Ulster and Connacht will need recruitment to get them to the next level, which is consistently being top six, which will be a great goal for both, I think.
It's going to be really interesting to see how many players that look, obviously we're probably talking about players at Leinster who are second and third string and have been maybe wondering for a while about a move. How many of them are just going to start getting a little bit interested about the project Stuart Lancaster is developing at Connacht?
I think talking to a few guys, like talking to Reese and people like that, I think it's the trust that Stuart instilled in all that group when they were coming up, and guys who are now in their, you know, mid to late 20s that played a lot under Stuart, they just seem to have a connection and a trust you know, and that just comes out in conversation when you're chatting to any of them. And I think if someone isn't reaching their kind of personal goals and they're at a standstill, not a standstill, but they're at a kind of fork in the road in their career, I think you will find that, you know, Stuart's, you know, kind of how he develops the play, you know, the person as well as the player, I think will have a massive effect on that recruitment style. And also, you know, I wouldn't underestimate what his factor in recruitment will be when he's lifting the phone, trying to recruit players from the Southern Hemisphere. You know, without being sensationalist, it could potentially be one of the best signings on or off the pitch in Irish rugby since professionalism started. You know, you look at the guys like he, in terms of just culture and what those, you know, key figures gave different provinces throughout the year, be it like Brad Thorne or John Langford or Dougie Howlett or Ruud Tupoki, what those guys gave to, you know, the legacy that they left. You know, I think in 4 or 5 years, we will be talking about Stuart leaving that legacy within Connacht. And that's just from chatting to guys that have played under him and just how, you know, how positive and how honestly they talk about the influence that he has had on them as not just players, but also individuals, which I think is the mark of how good he could be for Connacht.
I think it was really interesting this week. He referenced how good the youngsters are in Connacht. I don't think that's just a press comment. I think we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years a big development in the Connacht Academy and homegrown players start to come true. And, you know, he can judge, he knows what he saw in Donnybrook and the level of the Leinster Academy players. So, you know, there's probably not a need to bring young, unestablished players across if that continues to produce. But obviously, you know, if you can get an Irish international or two who are looking for a new challenge, you know, that can be a great aid to those youngsters and give them a little bit more depth on and off the field.
Munster, last season, sixth place in the after a chaotic season, a complete roller coaster, where in the end they finished sixth in the URC, lost in the quarterfinals after a pretty epic quarterfinal away to the Sharks in a place-kicking competition. They start away from home, first two games, Scarlets away from home this weekend, then Cardiff away, Edinburgh at home, and then two Interpros, Leinster away in Croke Park, followed by Connacht at home. This has to be the last new era we're talking about for a while at Munster, Bernard.
Yeah, and I think it will be. I think the RFU deserve massive credit for being able to go and get Clayton McMillan and Stuart Lancaster. Like, that is,
they picked candidates and went out and got them.
Exactly. And if you're gonna decrease your investment in squads, well, then increase your investment in coaches. And I think McMillan he's a guy who, you know, he mightn't have been the biggest name over here, because unless you're following Super Rugby, you might know a lot about him. But I think very quickly he was going to be someone that was a live candidate for big international jobs. Like, he is a rising star of New Zealand coaching, and I think he's a great get for Munster. I think it's really interesting where he's come from. The Chiefs, probably more than any other New Zealand province in recent history, for sure. The Crusaders were brilliant at it back at the start of kind of doing a deep dive into what actually being a Crusader means. And now the Chiefs did that under Wayne Smith and Dave Rennie, but McMillan very much added his layer to that. And we saw some real consistent performances on the field, played some brilliant rugby. And I think he's come to Munster. And again, if you dig deep into Munster rugby, folklore, history, legacy, there's incredible a lot of depth there. And I was interested in Dennis Leamy just chatting in press this week, kind of alluded to that we've kind of gone back to where Munster was built on. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to get away from that. So I think that'll be, like, you know, to be fair, the last post that win in the URC, they just haven't seemed to be completely as one, as a playing coach, playing group and coaching group. You know, obviously Graham ended up departing, and then you're in kind of limbo for most of the second half of the season until they announced Clayton. But then obviously, okay, he came over for a few days, but realistically, they were limping toward to the end of the season, really.
And they had a part-time forwards coach.
Part-time forwards coach. So, like, there was lots of excuses. Now, I think he's been able to bring in a team manager. He's been able to bring in a head of S&C. We know S&C was an area that there was conflict over in terms of were the players prepped to play? Were they prepped to be robust enough to play regularly? And, you know, some of the injuries we've seen would ask questions around that. We know the RFU sent in their expert last year to try and problem solve a little bit. So, again, if they can get that right and get their better players available for longer, and, like, we, you know, Codling is now going to be full-time, I think, after the World Cup. Yeah. He's full-time. You know, Prendergast has already improved their attack immeasurably. The way the Chiefs played certainly would have you believe that Clayton McMillan isn't an up the jumper type of coach.
Yeah,
and he's a real leader. He's probably the first guy since Razzie where I think everybody will follow without any going off script. So yeah, I think it can be a good season for them. I think Dan Kelly actually could be a real nice recruit. Nankerville is top class, but I think Dan Kelly has a point to prove and will give them go forward as well. So they'll have a nice balance to their play.
Johnny, I was half joking obviously there with Bernard saying this has to be the last new era for a while. But in fairness, I know we kind of say it a lot about teams. It is a cliche to say it's a new era, but like it very much is a new era for Munster, not just in terms of a new coach, but you have over the off season. Peter O'Mahony retires, Conor Murray retires, Stephen Archer goes, Dave Kilcoyne, I know he was injured a lot for that last season, he's gone, Rory Scannell has left. I totted that up a few days ago, and between the five of them, you're, I think, just under 1,000 Munster appearances. And chuck in whatever Peter O'Mahony and Conor Murray and Kilcoyne, between the three of them, you're talking 260, 270 Ireland appearances as well. It's a phenomenal amount of rugby experience that has gone out of the changing room in the last year. But in fairness, you do look around the group and you see players like Craig Casey and Jack Crowley, and obviously Tadhg Byrne is still there, a vastly experienced player. But there are players there who look ready and look like it's about time to step up and kind of make the team their own a little bit this year.
Yeah, Matt, and I think, you know, Craig doing that for Ireland over the summer, I think will also be a massive help to them. But you have guys there, you know, the spine of the team, in terms of, you know, your leadership from, you know, Tadhg to Craig to Jack. You know, they have those three leaders there that are going to drive it on and take it as their time. You know, and I think that's important. That with what Bert said, that those guys, you know, two homegrown guys, you know, Tadhg has probably traveled the path, you know, less traveled by those. And there are a few people like that will have chips on their shoulder, be it Mike Milne and Lee Barron and those guys that are going to have that opportunity to kind of showcase their skills. And I think when you combine all of that with it kind of going back to kind of what Liam said during the week and Macmillan, that, you know, they're going to be what Munster men want to be, I think that'll be big for them. But there's a huge amount of talent in that group, and there's younger guys we mentioned, you know, like Evan O'Connell and those guys that have a leadership experience role, albeit at under 20s, but can really step up to the mark over the next couple of years. So it's exciting times. I think there is a bit of work to be done kind of within structures and off the pitch in terms of that stuff that probably hasn't been dealt with correctly, in my opinion, over the last number of years. But once that work is kind of being put in place now, I think that they'll see the fruits of that over the years to come.
I'm kind of stating the obvious here, Bernard, I presume, but I assume that not making themselves have to go on a run in the final third of the season is going to be very, very important. They haven't got off to a good start to a season since Johan van Graan's final year, 2021-22, the first season of the new URC. The last three campaigns, they have left themselves seriously scrambling in the final third of the season. It's like, I don't know what to make of the start. Like, it's on paper, two away games to start off. Yeah, that's tough. Scarlets and Cardiff at the same time in one-off games against those two Munster should be backing themselves to win. Then Edinburgh at home as well. And then you've got two Interpros, obviously, which can be a bit tougher. But it has to be about getting a good start this season.
Yeah.
We can't be talking again in April about can Munster go on a run and get that spot in the top six or the top four or the top eight.
Yeah, and why do they have so many poor starts? I think someone was down to that lack of connection between the rugby and the gym, or the rugby and the off-field conditioning. They just never really seem to get that right. So I'm really putting confidence in the fact that they've learned from their mistakes. McMillan has had a chance to be there for the preseason. He's had his S&C coach. They've worked together before, and they bring their best. They don't need their best out in the training field. Their best is for a Saturday afternoon. And I don't think either of those first two fixtures are overly daunting. I saw Scarlets had a shocking result against one of the Welsh Prem teams in their warm-up. And again, you know, where are they mindset-wise? Where are they in terms of confidence in the future of the Scarlets? So I think Munster have a chance with a new coaching staff to get off to a really fast start and not give themselves a mountain to climb, which they've managed to do, to be fair to them, consistently. But how nice would it be heading into the last few rounds kind of knowing that you've got your home seeding secure.
Who is your one to watch for Munster this season? Did you tee it up a little bit earlier on?
No. If a Dogbo was fit, if I could confident he could stay fit, I'm really fascinated to see where his ceiling is. But I like Lee Barron. I think Lee Barron has, like Gus McCarthy did brilliantly last year and is a super rugby player. But I think Barron could even be better. And I think Barron moving down there, if he can become first choice for Munster, which I think he can, he has that size and scope to be a real, like a Dan Sheen type player.
He's of a similar physique. Honestly, you know, he's a taller hooker.
He's a footballer. Yeah. He has pace. And the difference it can make to play 3 weeks out of four rather than play 1 and 6 or 1 and 7, which unfortunately can be the case for some of those youngsters in Leinster, I think can be massive. So I would expect him to have a big season and could get pushed past Gus in the international reckon. If he goes first choice for Munster, I think Farrell will find it hard to leave him out, because I think his capacity and, as I said, his ceiling is very high.
Johnny, who are you investing your podcast stock in?
Evan O'Connell. I think just his, like you mentioned, size and scope, you know, he has it. You know, Munster was built on leadership style, big style, second rows, you know, from Golov up. I think he has someone that has that quality at a young age, just signed a new 2-year deal. I think we're going to see a lot more of him as he extends and grows within that leadership space. But I think he could be a bolter for me.
I like this. Nice blend of, you know, young players who are above 30 and kind of about to have another crack at it. I'm liking this now. Nice little blend to it. Leinster, last season champions of the URC, like completely just demolished the Bulls in the final. The Champions Cup is the other story. That is the big question. Fixtures to start off: Stormers away, Bulls away, Sharks at home, Munster home, Zebra at home. The goal, obviously, Bernard, is still the same. But you hinted at it earlier on, and it's something I brought up last week. I'm really interested to see how an early South African tour changes Leinster's season, because they went 4 years in a row of going to South Africa after the Six Nations. And Leo Cullen said it last week, there are logistical challenges to it, to literally just find it out who's going to be on the plane and sorting out all those arrangements. Having those sort of things out of the way a little bit earlier in the campaign, this is the best opportunity they'll have now to be able to go full steam ahead in the final third and really challenge on two fronts.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll make such a difference to them. And also, to be fair to these youngsters, they've effectively been the ones who've been doing pre-season together. So it gives them a much better chance of showing the best possible version of themselves. And
you're not preparing two teams. Exactly. Like they weren't. Someone wasn't at home preparing a Champions Cup team to play someone, to play Leicester Tigers in 2 weeks' time or something.
Yeah,
like
over the last couple of years, players have probably gone from playing AIL to playing against the Bulls away with a lot of other players in similar circumstances. So this actually helps Leinster be better in South Africa, I think, just because of the continuity of pre-season into going there early. It's obviously a huge season for them. Like the silverware will have helped confidence levels, whatever, but like, if we're going to be totally honest about it, the Bulls just didn't show up. Like that was the first knockout game that Leinster had been gifted, like where the opposition didn't show up. So all the other games, they've either had to fight to win them or they've lost them. I think that's the issue. And we obviously found, I think some of us knew that there was big issues in the Bulls camp at the end of last season, and it transpired post that URC defeat that there was an unrest in the squad, and Jake has left. Ackerman coming in could be a massive boost, because certainly in terms of playing squad, the Bulls have some serious talent. And Ackerman, in terms of what he did with the Lions back in the day, he was able to bring a squad of effectively rejects together and
get a Super Rugby final,
and play an amazing brand of rugby. Didn't go as well in Gloucester. Japan didn't go as well as either, but I think with the South African rugby player, I think Ackerman has an ability to bring them together. So the Bulls could be far better this season. That sounds harsh because they got to a final, but they could be genuine contenders. And Leinster, obviously off the field, have re-signed Robin, Tyler Blindale, and Jacques Nienaber, which particularly for Jacques, I think that's a big step, because there was certainly a lot of questions around would he go back for a tripeat, and now he's locked in. I think they got to go and win the double, or at least win Europe now to get the silverware that reflects the squad they have.
And Johnny, it was really interesting last week. Leo Cullen was asked to reflect on how the 2024-25 season went, and in fairness to him, he was very honest in how he spoke about the Northampton game. And he did question whether or not some complacency might have crept into the group, and I imagine that is something that has been discussed at length, both between the coaches, between the players. Do you think it's good to have that sort of stuff out in the air, out in the open?
Well, I think it's out in the open within the group anyway, because they would have been kind of red teaming themselves to make sure that whatever stone was left unturned, that they flip it this year, and what decisions they got wrong, be it selection or prep week or that kind of stuff, they would have had an overall review to ensure that doesn't happen again. So I think once it's out there, it is out there. But the pressure from within, I think, is going to be, is going to be more than from outside. They know where they're at. They did get medals. It wasn't the medal that they wanted. Everyone knows that. So the pressure is from within, and they have to manage that mentally and get, when they're in those, the melting pot moments, that they can get over the line and get that done. I do think, going back to the security that the players now have, knowing that, I think that will be a big thing for the Leinster players in particular, knowing that Jack is going to be staying, I think is a big thing mentally for them, because there was always going to be a worry, regardless, subconsciously you're thinking, oh, well, Jack's going to go back to South Africa anyway in a year, so, let's make the most of it. Where now everyone, young and old within the squad, have that security, and they know that they can grow under him. So I think, to be fair to the IRFU and all the provinces, they've done a great job in securing really good coaching staff within all four provinces, and giving all the players within those the security and the knowledge that, this is, each province is at a different stage, But all the players have that security that they know they're going to be working under these coaches, you know, hopefully for a number of years. Probably 3 months' time when something goes wrong and there's three lads gone thrown out. But you can clip that. But yeah, I think that is a security blanket for the players. I think in Leinster in particular, that Jack is staying. That I wouldn't underestimate how huge that is mentally for those players playing under him.
They do have got a right old tough start, in fairness, like two games away in South Africa, Munster at home. I know Zebra at home as well, but Sharks at home. Like, they have sometimes, I do wonder, have they had it a little bit too easy in the first few games of the season? And it's not their fault, obviously, if they're going out and they're comfortably beating teams. Even if this wasn't a South African tour, it's probably no harm for them to get a little bit roughed up early in the season when they're not going to have some of those Lions players back available.
No, absolutely. And I think you'd have to also just say about Leinster, like, especially if you take into his form over the Rugby Championship, Rico Ioane isn't as good as Jordy Barrett. You know what I mean? As well, and like, they had this ace in the pack in their, last year, and they didn't use it, mm-hmm. you know, against Northampton. But even taking into account, I think off the field as well, in terms of Jordy Barrett's influence, from my understanding of Rico, he's more of just an individual talent, and yeah. Absolutely he's X factor when he's on form, but he's been sent back to play, you know, NPC because his form has dropped off. So can Leinster get the best out of him, or is it going to be more a case of, you know, the Irish internationals really stepping up and being the key difference in those big games? But yeah, finding being tested early is going to be it's going to be no disadvantage to them, because we know that they have the squad depth to be there in the knockout stages of the URC, regardless if they're top seed or second seed. By then, they'll have all their frontline players available. So finding out areas that need to be fixed early doors will certainly help them eventually when it comes to the big games in the URC in Europe.
All right, we'll finish off on Leinster to give me your player to watch. Who are you most interested to see?
Alex Soroka. I think
he was the one I picked from my preview last week as well.
I think he's primed for a big season, and I know it's an incredibly competitive area, and he's gonna have to fight tooth and nail to get game time. But I think there's something about him. I think he brings an edge. He wins a lot of collisions. He's a big, rangy line-out option. Yeah, I think he could have a massive season for Leinster, and if the likes of a Max Deegan, who got a lot of game time last year and is very talented and had a very good season, you know, they'd be looking over his shoulder at someone like Soroka.
Yeah. Johnny?
Dermot Mangan. I know he's one of my own, but I'm going to go after Mangan. I just think he's coming out of the academy, signed a 2-year deal, was involved with Ireland for a week, finished the season strong. I think with the opportunity he's going to get first up going down to Africa, his mindset and how he goes about his business, I think he's going to have a really big year. And he's someone that, in Lions years, there's two or three players all the time that really take the opportunity that they're given with those guys away. And I think Mangan's going to be one of those.
Yeah. Be really interesting to see how he gets on. He did look very, very sharp in the games he had last season. Before we finish up, Bernard, I do want to talk about the Women's World Cup final this weekend. It's final Saturday at Allianz Stadium at Twickenham, New Zealand and France, in the bronze medal game at 12:30. And then the main event, 4:00, Canada versus England. Canada sensational in the semi-final against the Black Ferns, 34-19 winners. And England, 35-17 against France. Not really what most people were expecting. The obvious question, do Canada have a shot this weekend?
They definitely have a shot. I'm shocked at how unimpressive England have been. Going into this World Cup, I didn't think anyone could get within 15 points of them. I just thought they were that far ahead. And even though the Black Ferns have a phenomenal record and caught them in the World Cup final last time, I still didn't see anyone getting close to them. But just being... England are brilliant at hammering the really bad teams. You know, they look so good, and they can,
when they find a weakness, they just go after it.
But that weakness isn't as evident in a team like Canada And for long periods of the Australian game, earlier on in the competition, they really struggled as well against France. I mean, that was a game of France where probably the France that we saw a year and a half ago, France could have beaten them. You know, I don't think it's a vintage French team at the moment.
Yeah.
They're not at their best, and we saw that against Ireland. And yet they could have...
And in famously have a couple of suspensions.
Yeah, at the moment. Exactly. They're missing some players. There's a bit of unrest with the coach, etc. And they put it up to England. The performance Canada had against New Zealand in Black Ferns in their semi-final was nearly a total performance. Mm. I mean, their line-out is immaculate. Like, it's nearly at 100%. Their use of the line-out ball is really varied. They've got a nice balance to their game. Their physicality is top notch. Their offloading game and their support lines are excellent. And they've got some depth as well. But more importantly, I think, is they've got a cause and a team spirit where everybody is completely behind it. And I'm not saying England aren't... The goal of a home World Cup for England is obviously massive, but I just don't see that English team, and based on what we see in the games, of being as unified and as connected. Now, they have a huge amount of advantages. They've got player depth. They've got a lot of world-class players as well. But even Canada having to go fund me to get here, there just seems to be a...
$1 million.
$1 million. They just seem on a different level than every other team bar England in terms of their connection. And maybe that gives them a chance to pull off a big shock. But... you know, obviously England are still deserve to be favourites.
Yeah, it's a very easy comparison to make between England and Leinster over the last few years, that all the signs point towards they are the best team and that they will win whatever the competition is. But the closer that you get down towards the date and you get down towards this final, you start to think with England, oh God, lost the final 3 years ago, lost the final in 2017. I'd be really fascinated to just see like inside that team room over the next few days to see how that is sitting on the shoulders and see how that pressure is feeling.
Yeah, and John Mitchell has been quite open that they haven't actually been training very well as well, which is very frustrating for him. So yeah, there certainly would be some doubts and uncertainty in England, which sounds crazy because of their track record of winning consistently and the players they have. But I don't think England would have seen Canada coming and being as impressive as they've been in this competition and peaking at the right time, saving your best rugby for a knockout stage is ideal, when particularly when you're coming in as underdogs. And it would be, look, England win the World Cup, they deserve to have a World Cup, but I think if Canada could do it, given the travel and logistical issues that are in the game, given the lack of money the governing body have, given the fact that there's no professional game there, like they're very, for me, they remind me of the Irish team of Fiona Coughlin and Lynn Cantwell, where you just had a generation of rugby players who kind of just did it themselves, you know, without any big support. And if that can happen in professional sport, you know, it's rare, so it's exciting to think that it is possible.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see, and it's a very strange dynamic. You'd kind of be torn. Like England, I don't like to say a team ever deserves to win it, because you know if you win it, you deserve to win it. But for where they've kind of brought the game, kind of pulled everyone else up to their level.
And to be honest, Neil,
there needs to be some sort. I would kind of like them to get that recognition and to get their day in the sun for it. But at the same time, I am thinking what an underdog story it would be for Canada to win it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And to be fair, they've also helped Canada rugby. Yeah. They've helped Irish rugby.
Yeah, they've helped,
you know, because the best players migrate there to play their domestic rugby. So yeah, I wouldn't begrudge them at all. I just was blown away by Canada's skill set, their attitude, against obviously a very good opposition, and they blew them away.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see this weekend. Johnny, before I leave you go, the AIL starts this weekend. Who've Nace got first up?
We're away to Estonians, who are probably favourites of the league. They've kind of, I think they've only lost two games in the last 3 years. Like,
back to back promotions.
So yeah, we're going up to play against Ian Whitten and those lads. So be a tough start, but yeah, we're looking forward to it. We've done okay in the in pre-season, but it's this kind of unknown. We won't really know where we kind of lie until the end of this block. So we've Wesley then the following week, and then Trinity the following week. So after the block of three, we'll have a fair idea. But yeah, we're looking forward to getting started.
I don't think anyone has a fair idea in 1B of where they are until about three or four games to go.
It's always a bit of a scramble. You talk about going on a run. So post-Christmas, if you can put a string of four or five games together, you could end up second. But yeah, it's always a crazy, crazy league. But looking forward to getting started.
Good Johnny, stuff. Just is there a chance that it's going to go regional below 1A, 1B?
There has been talk about that, so there's been a few meetings around that from an IRFU perspective. There was a template sent out to all coaches and all clubs in the AIL. I'm not sure of the appetite within Leinster for that, but it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out. So it's a really difficult one to get resolved. I think everyone wants to still have senior status, which it will be clear in what the RFU has sent out in the review, that everyone, there's still kind of the top 50 teams are going to be senior.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, every year everyone talks about how they're going to fix the AIL. Some people, does it need fixing? Does it need more backing? Does it need more of the pro side to be involved in it? And then different provinces have different viewpoints on how it works. So it's a really tricky one to get right. But I think there will be some restructure. How that lies is going to be probably how the province has come back to the RFU with what has been sent out to them.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see. I'd say a lot of work still to do to figure out what that long-term format is going to be. But Johnny, best of luck this weekend. Best of luck for the season ahead. Bernard, thanks a million for coming in to join us as always. Just a reminder as well, live coverage of those two Women's Rugby World Cup games across RTE this weekend. New Zealand, France is live on RTE Player. And then Canada, England, the main event, kick-off 4 p.m. on RTE2 and RTE Player as well. We'll speak to you again soon.